everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is the Phoenix Comic Fest wrap-up episode. Just going to give you some of my thoughts about the show, tell you some of the things I did, some of the things I saw, and some of the creators I talked to, as well as tease you for some upcoming interviews, both ones that were conducted at the show, as well as some others that I set up for later down the line. So first of all, my overall impressions of the show, from a podcasting standpoint, it was very productive. To talk to a lot of creators, took a lot of photos that went out to Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. So hope you guys are all following the Comic Source at one of those places so you could see all the awesome content. Saw a lot of friends, a lot of creators I knew, as well as some retailers and just other fans. So it's always great when I get to run into to friends and talk to creators that I haven't seen in a while, or even some that I saw as recently as last week, and I got to see them again. So, you know, some people I saw at Comic-Con Revolution that I got to touch base with again this weekend. So from my standpoint, it was a very successful show, you know, just sharing my love of comics with fellow creators and getting to generate content for all of you guys. It's not to say absolutely everything was positive. There were, in my opinion, some missteps. There's room for improvement from the convention organizers, and it's kind of weird. I guess it comes down to like what experiences you have as a con promoter, and what direction you're coming to it as, right? When you put on a convention, so. The founder of Phoenix Comic Fest, as it's now known, that was only 1 year. It went from Phoenix Comic Con to Phoenix Comic Fest, and there was a press conference Sunday morning where they announced that going forward it's going to be called Phoenix Fan Fusion, which didn't exactly sit well with me and didn't with a lot of retailers either, but I'll come back to that. But the guy that founded Phoenix Comic Con, he comes at it from a retailer's perspective, right? He was a vendor at shows. That's how he made his living, was going around and selling and exhibiting at shows. So that's where he comes at it from. And that's a bit of a different take than someone like me, who's more on the press side of things. So I will say that Phoenix Comic Con, Phoenix Fan Fest, Phoenix Fan Fusion, whatever you want to call it, is not a very press-friendly show. There's no... especially for a show of its size, you really would think there'd be a quiet spot to work, right? You know, a lot of bigger shows smaller than Phoenix Comic Fest, have dedicated press rooms. And I don't even say you need to go that far and have food like some of them do and free Wi-Fi like some of them do. But just give me a quiet space where I can work, you know, where I'm not competing with the other convention goers to sit down and type up an article or edit some audio, whatever it might be. And it, perhaps a quiet place for an interview would be nice as well, because it's tough, right? When you do the interviews at the table, then you can be interrupted. And even though... that's fine. Like, I don't begrudge a fan coming up and wanting to meet somebody. I mean, I oftentimes will, you know, if the creator or the person I'm interviewing doesn't realize, I'll say, hey, I don't want the fan to wait on me. Please go, and I will edit it out afterward. But even so, I feel like the fan feels like maybe they're bothering them or they don't get the creator's undivided attention. You know what I mean? So I feel like it's better to not do the interviews at the table. And sometimes, you know, the creator, whoever I'm talking to, prefers to do it at their table, especially if they're there alone, because they don't want to miss out on sales and things like that. And that's totally understandable. You know, I'm flexible, obviously. So, and that's why some creators prefer to do the interviews before the show floor opens, which is totally fine as well. But the point is, some of them don't. want to do it at the table. Some of them prefer to get a break, you know, to walk away from their table for half an hour and do an interview. And I'm scrambling trying to find a quiet corner just to conduct this interview. So again, it's not a press friendly show. And I feel like it's, when you cover these conventions, it's a very symbiotic relationship. You know, I'm obviously I'm gaining benefit from the show because they are paying to bring these creators in, whether some of them are getting an appearance fee or not. The convention is still, you know, paying to fly them in, paying for their hotel rooms and such. So certainly that's their, you know, prerogative to not provide me as press any, you know, dedicated space or whatever. But again, it is like good press is good marketing. It's marketing they don't have to pay for, right? And as much as I might not like the fact that they're not a press-friendly show, I still would recommend going to Phoenix Comic Fest. I feel like there's a lot to do there. So I don't think that I'm bad-mouthing the show. But my point is, if it were like a very press-friendly show, I would be shouting that from the rooftops as well and telling all, you know, everybody I know, hey, you really need to go to the show. You know, it really drums up interest. And from a guest perspective, when they get a lot of good publicity and good press from a show, they're more likely to return. And, you know, comics is a small industry. So when you're talking about, you know, comic creators and publishers, when there starts to be a good buzz about a show because a lot of the press have good things to say about it, it only benefits the show. So, again, it's a very give and take relationship. And I just feel like they're not really giving press much. But again, I think it's just their perspective. It's the way they're coming at it. I don't think anybody that really involved with putting on the show has any kind of press background. So it's probably just not something they're maybe even necessarily aware of. So, all that being said, I did get a lot of great interviews for you guys. I spoke with the legendary Brian Azzarello about his DC Black Label book that's coming up. I spoke with David Barron, who's been on the show several times before, about Stained, and that episode actually already came out this last Sunday. I got to sit in on a press room with Manu Bennett, who plays Slade Wilson or Deathstroke on Arrow, and that episode already came out as well on Memorial Day. I also spoke with writer Joshua Williamson, who's writer on The Flash, Justice League No Justice, along with Scott Snyder and James Tynan, and has the upcoming Justice League Odyssey. Actually spoke with Scott Snyder as well, superstar writer. A lot of you will know from his work on Batman, currently writing Justice League No Justice and has the Justice League title starting next month. Spoke with James Tynan, the fourth, who just finished up his long run on Detective Comics, is currently co-writing the Justice League No Justice and has a Justice League Dark book coming out. Spoke with Addy Granov, who is an illustrator and concept artist. In fact, he's the one who did the concept art for the first Iron Man movie. So if you like the way that armor looks, you have Addy to thank. I spoke with Stefan Frank, a longtime friend of the show, founder of Dark Planet Comics, animator who's worked on things like Iron Giant. It's probably his most well-known. But he has the creator-owned title from Dark Planet called Silver, which is about vampires and a con man, and it's just absolutely incredible. So I'll have an interview coming up with him very soon. Also spoke with Jonathan Glapion, who works most closely with Greg Capullo these days as kind of his personal inker. And that was a really great conversation that Jonathan and I got to sit down and have early Saturday, just on the kind of the nature of inking, what inking is and what it isn't. I think there's a lack of knowledge out there from fans. A lot of fans that just don't realize what it is that inking does or what inkers do. So that was a really great interview. I also spoke with Mark Farmer, who is a longtime veteran of the industry, works most frequently with Alan Davis, and again, just got his thoughts on inking and kind of the state of inking in today's comics. Had a great conversation with Todd Knock, specifically about his Where's Wolverine cover. They're the variants for the Hunt for Wolverine, the four Hunt for Wolverine miniseries that are out right now. And that was a great conversation. I mean, Todd's a good friend. He's always great to see. And man, just the sheer amount of work. Like, if you haven't seen that Where's Wolverine cover, or it's actually four covers that go together to create one image. And then there's a larger poster with it all together. But that's a great interview with Todd talking about putting it together, designing it, and just how long it took him. It was he has a great analogy in there. I won't spoil it for you here, but that was a really, really fun conversation specifically about him working on that cover. I also got a chance to sit down and talk with Dan Panosian. And I hadn't met Dan before, like knew the name, obviously, and had seen his work throughout the years. But I recently read his Slots series, which he, because previously he'd been an illustrator. Well, he actually wrote and illustrated this really fun kind of throwback to the 70s kind of old Vegas style story, which was super awesome. But then on top of it being such a great story, I got to sit down and kind of get to know Dan while doing this interview. And he, I got to tell you, he's such a genuine, like a great guy, you know? And so it's always awesome when you meet creators and they are not only inspirational creatively, but they're just like really cool people. And it just makes you want to like signal boost their stuff that much more and be in their corner, so to speak. So Dan was great to talk to, and the series is really, really amazing. I highly recommend it. So that interview is going to be coming up a little bit later in a few weeks. We're going to release it right before the Slots trade paperback goes on sale. So keep your eyes and ears peeled for that one. Also, a real highlight of the show, maybe the biggest highlight of the show for me, was discovering Stranger Comics. I got to meet with founder Sebastian A. Jones and discover this inclusive world that he's created. Haven't like tumbled down the rabbit hole yet. I bought their hardcover deal they had going on there. It was a really incredible deal, like three hardcovers, three prints, and like another of the first issue that's like a sequel to one of the hardcovers. And it was a great deal. It was like 60% or no, maybe 40% off, I think, getting all that stuff together. So I can't wait to dive into the world. The art is unbelievably beautiful. And so like I said, I sat down with Sebastian, also recorded the Stranger Comics panel for you. So I'll be sharing that. And then we're going to be having Sebastian come back on and talk specifically about the world of Stranger Comics and the world, the fantasy world that he's creating, once I have a chance to absorb the material a little bit, so to speak. So yeah, that was a really, really incredible discovery that I made at the show, and definitely a highlight. And I got to tell you, Sebastian's one of the most passionate, intelligent, articulate people I've met in comics in a really long time. So that was a real highlight. I also got to sit in on the press room for Sean Gunn. That was a really, really short one. He had a huge line most of the weekend, and it's just kind of the nature of the way they did the press room there at Phoenix. They haven't really done them in the past, and it wasn't – I don't want to say it wasn't the most organized. It's just they knew that things were going to have to be kind of flexible, so to speak. They knew that it was going to not – be any kind of set times because, you know, the convention is paying these people to be there, right? And they're guaranteeing them a certain amount of money. And so they want to service those fans that are in line, that have paid money for an autograph or a photo and things like that. So, and from the celebrity's point of view, it's kind of the same thing. They're there to meet, not only meet fans, but to make money, right? So, they're always going to put the fans who are standing in line as a priority over that press room, which I'm totally fine with. It makes perfect sense. But they set the press room up like in the hallway. You know, they like blocked it off with these temporary walls. But the top was open, so you got a lot of ambient noise from the hallway. And plus, they had a booth right next to the little press area where these guys were putting on this live radio show, complete with music and stuff. So there was times, and you'll hear it in the Manu Bennett episode if you listen to it, where like this music is just very disruptive for that kind of process. So it was kind of annoying. I you know, again, I hate to be negative, but if there's anything I can say about Phoenix Comic Fest, Square Egg Productions, the team that puts it on, is they're quick learners. So I'm sure they will take their experience this year and make it better next year. So I'm not sure how they can exactly do it as far as doing press rooms, if they'll do them again. But if they do, I'm sure they'll make sure they're kind of separate from the rest of the show floor a little better. Because here's the thing, right? It's like we didn't even find out what time the press rooms were until late Thursday. And Thursday was already like preview day, right? The show floor opened at 3. It was open, I think, 3 to 8. So I had already gone around and set up interviews with a lot of creators. And then I get my press times late that night. And now I have to go back to people, comic creators that I've already set up interviews with, and move things around based on what time the press rooms were. So it wasn't ideal, right? And then I go to the press rooms and find out things like, oh, well, Sean Gunn was supposed to be at this time, but his line is still huge, so we're moving him to this other time. Again, I understand you want to put the fans first. Totally fine with that, but just realize that I can't be that flexible. You know, not if I have another interview scheduled. I don't want to go inconvenience a comic creator who, you know, I already made a scheduled interview with. So things like that make it a little tough. Again, it goes back to being not real press friendly, but other shows where it is more of a, okay, you're going to go to the press room for, this show at this time and whatever, like Lost in Space, let's say, I use that as an example because it's the most recent like professional press room I've done. The actors were all there and they were available to us as a priority, but that's because Netflix was paying them to be there and promote the show, right? So it's a different situation. So again, don't feel like I'm beating up Phoenix Comic Fest for saying that. It's a different situation. So if Phoenix Comic Fest or Phoenix Fan Fusion, whatever they'll call it, if they want to like have the reputation of a more professional show, then they're going to need to just let the guests know, hey, we do schedule a press room. It's at this time. And it will take priority over, you know, whatever. And I would say even do it like first thing in the morning, like do those first before the person's first scheduled signing time or photo op time, because then anybody who goes and gets in line, they can already expect that, okay, it doesn't start until like noon, let's say. Then do the press room at 11:30. They can come in, they do the press room first, and then they can go out and meet their fans. And then it's not a situation where the celebrity is there and they're meeting fans, and then they have to be pulled away from working the line and meeting fans to go to a press room. So anyway, it's just my few cents. The other thing that kind of bugged me was that the marketing manager and other people from the PR team, they were the ones asking questions, rather than like taking questions from the actual press. And again, I think this is kind of due to the nature of the people that were there. I think actually the way those questions got created was if a celebrity agreed to the press room, they're like, this is the thing that I want to talk about, right? Like Sean Gunn. He's there. He wants to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy. That's kind of where most of the fandom knows him from, right? But he was also on Gilmore Girls for like the entire run of the show. But I don't know that he was necessarily there to promote Gilmore Girls. You know what I'm saying? So if you open it up to questions from the audience, then or the press audience, then you run the risk of somebody asking something that he's not there to promote, so to speak. So, and that happens in professional press rooms too. And I always it bugs the heck out of me. Like it bothered me when I was at the Lost in Space press room and people were asking some of the actors about other things they'd done. It's just like, be professional, right? That Netflix is paying them to be there. They're there to promote Lost in Space. Ask them about Lost in Space, not black sales like a couple of people talked to Toby Stevens about. But again, that's just my personal thing. I would never do that. But I'm sure that's why Phoenix Comic Fest did it the way that they did. So let's see, what else? As far as shopping goes, you know, I talked to a lot of my retailer friends, and for several of them, it was kind of a down year. What's interesting is, so early Sunday morning, I was on the floor about to do an interview with somebody I forgot to mention who I got to interview on Sunday, which is Glenn Rain, who is one of the main artists at Blizzard Entertainment for World of Warcraft and StarCraft. So when you see those loading screens in the game, or you see artwork, either marketing artwork or promotional artwork, advertising, the artwork on the boxes, a lot of that stuff is Glenn Rain, and his art is incredible, man. I mean, it is just awesome. But anyway, we're about to do an interview early Sunday morning before the show floor opened, and the founder of Phoenix Comic Fest came on and wanted to thank everybody and also apologize. He had talked to a lot of them throughout the weekend, and a lot of their sales were down. And he did say that the badges, the number of tickets sold for Phoenix Comic Fest this year was 30% lower than it was last year. And he talked about a few of the contributing factors. And again, I think there are multiple reasons for this. As a lot of you will know, last year there was an armed gunman that brought live weapons and ammunition into the convention center in the hopes of ambushing one of the guests. And that led to a knee-jerk reaction to ban all props on Friday, which caused outrage for many, many, many people. And Phoenix Comic Con, as it was called last year, had to scramble and get a whole new security plan in place in like 18 hours. And it led to really, really long lines. Some people waited like 2.5 hours to get in last year because they were like basically using wands, you know, handheld metal detectors to check everybody, and no props. So cosplayers were upset, and you know, it was a record heat in Phoenix last year. It was like 113 people are waiting to get in, just standing in line forever. You know, it was a nightmare. So this year, obviously they were prepared. It wasn't as hot this year. That's another thing. It's the coolest it's been for Phoenix Comic Con in Phoenix in many, many years, probably 3 or 4 years, I'd say at least. But all that extra security, they had like, I don't even know how many metal detectors, 20 maybe metal detectors, plus stations where if you were in a costume or had strollers, or whatever, where they would hand wand you. So I never saw any really long lines. I think the longest I waited to get in was 20 minutes on Friday. And that's only because I went to the exhibitor entrance, which was probably a mistake because the show floor hadn't opened yet. The show floor was still like an hour and a half away from opening, but all the vendors were coming in at that time. And again, they're ones that have to be hand-wanted, right? Because they've got all this product that they're bringing in and this and that. So yeah, it was about 20 minutes that it took me to get in one of the days. But other than that, every other time I just walked right in. It was no big deal. Now, granted, I was getting there earlier than a lot of people, but even when I went to the car in the middle of the day and came back, had no problems. So I think it was done very efficiently, but that's not cheap, right? I think it was $18. It cost the show $18 a person for all that security. And I'm not sure, and extra personnel. And what I'm not sure about was is that $18 a person per day, or just $18 for every badge they sold? I wasn't clear on that. Either way, it's a huge, huge chunk of money. And so because of that added cost, and some other added costs, like Phoenix Comic Con doesn't use any volunteers, or Phoenix Comic Fest, I should say, no volunteers. Everybody's paid. So that's another huge cost. Obviously, you've got to raise the prices for admission, right? So they nearly doubled, though. I think they went from 80 for a four-day pass last year to 120. So when you're paying 120 bucks for a four-day pass just to get in the door, it leaves you a lot less money to spend once you get inside. That's number one. Number two, it's going to price some people out. Some people are just not going to go. Some people are not going to come back because of the bad experience they had last year with waiting 2.5 hours in the sun. Some people are not going to come back this year because of the bad experience they had with props being banned momentarily. Because I will say, last year, after the event, they did allow some props in on Saturday and Sunday, just no guns, basically. And this year, everybody knew that ahead of time. Like, right, doesn't matter how fake your gun looked. If it looked anything resembling a gun, you couldn't bring it in. I saw plenty of swords and Harley Quinn hammers and all kinds of other props that people had, but no guns, right? And that was kind of sad for like, especially the people I saw that were dressed as like Umbrella Corporation from Resident Evil. Those guys just don't look right without weapons, without like guns, right? But they're not allowed. And a lot of them would bring in airsoft weapons was what a lot of them were using, which, you know, looks super authentic. So obviously you don't want anything like that, and they weren't allowing anything like that. But it made those guys look really strange. Any Lara Croft Tomb Raider person I saw, you know, again, no gun, looked weird. And there were a few other, like Deathstroke, again, looks kind of weird. At least a lot of them, the Deathstrokes I saw had a plastic sword. So that was something. But, you know, you're going to get people that, okay, I can't bring in my fake gun. Like, I'm a stormtrooper. I can't bring in a blaster. Not going to go. So, again, a combination of things, right? Bad experience last year with heat, bad experience last year with props, price going up. The other thing is that school got out a week earlier this year in Phoenix than it did last year. So there was a ton of graduation parties this weekend, and graduation celebrations and graduations themselves to keep people away. So it certainly wasn't the guest lineup, because I feel like this year's guest lineup, both for celebrities and comic creators, was leaps and bounds above last year. I didn't generate that much content last year. But this year, like, I mean, I told you the people that I talked to, Scott Snyder, James Tynan, you know, Manu Bennett, Todd Knock, Dan Panosian, who else was there? Greg Capullo, Tim Sale, Klaus Janssen, Art Adams, Alan Davis, Charles Soule, I mean, Frank Cho, David Michelini, who I'd never seen at a show before, who I wanted to interview, but he doesn't give interviews. But I did get to talk old school comics with him for quite a while, and that was a lot of fun. Todd McFarlane was there as well. Saw him. I mean, he's just a superstar. And people got in line. He was only doing autographs for 100 people on Sunday afternoon. People got in line for Todd's autograph at 5 a.m. on Sunday morning. That's how crazy it was. But I saw him down in Artist Alley. He was down in Artist Alley like ahead of time before that. And I did see a few people that recognized him go over and get some books signed. So that was kind of cool. Like, I didn't have anything for him to sign. I don't even think I have any. Do I have any Todd McFarlane signed stuff? I don't think I do, but I've met him on several occasions. He's always super, super nice. You know, he lives here in Phoenix. He's local. So I feel like if I really needed to get something signed, I could. But again, I mean, his art's great, and I did love it back in the day, but he's not my favorite artist. And so I respect him, and I respect everything he's done. But again, he's just not one. I mean, happy to say hi. Completely respect the guy as a creator, but he's not somebody like, I must have a Todd McFarlane sketch, or I must have a Todd McFarlane autograph. Don't get me wrong, I'd take those things if I could. And that would actually be a tough one. If I got a Todd McFarlane sketch, I mean, I can't even imagine what one of those would go for these days. I mean, his original art goes for just tons. I mean, we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I can only imagine even what a quickie sketch by him would go for it. That would be pretty incredible. So would I keep it is the question, or would I sell it? You know what? I think I would sell it if I got a sketch, unless it was something like where I met him and we you know, got to talk to him for a while and kind of established a relationship. And he decided, you know, to sketch something for me. I think in that situation, I'd keep it. But if it were just a situation where, you know, like he's like, I met him for like 30 seconds and he's like, let me sketch something for you. You know, and took 3 to 5 minutes and sketched something for me. I think in that situation, I might sell it. And this is why, not because I want the money, although that would be nice, but I think because there are people out there who are giant Todd McFarlane fans, which I am not, right? So I just think that they would enjoy it more. I'd rather have somebody who's really, it's going to like be like the prized, you know, centerpiece of their collection, their crown jewel. I would want it to go to somebody like that rather than keep it myself. I don't know if that makes sense, but anyway, I digress, right? Some other creators that were there that I want to mention that maybe not a lot of you know, Jason Inman and Ashley B. Robinson were there in Artist Alley. They weren't guests of the show, but they're friends and they had their Jupiter Jet trade paperback there. It's their property that they did with Action Labs, and the trade paperback actually comes out tomorrow as you're listening to this, May 30th. So it's a really great story. I had picked up the individual issues, read it. I had Jason on the show previously to talk about Jupiter Jet. And last weekend when I was in Ontario for Comic-Con Revolution, I bought the trade paperback for my daughter, my six-year-old daughter, read it to her this week as like a bedtime story, and she loved it. She fell in love with the characters, fell in love with the story. And to make a long story short, she wanted to cosplay as Jupiter Jet. My six-year-old daughter went with me to the show for a few hours on Thursday, and she, as it turns out, was the first ever person to cosplay at Jupiter Jet. And it was a great moment to see Jason and Ashley see their character come to life. They were super excited. Aspen had a giant smile on her face. And it was just great. It was great to see Ashley and Jason. It was great to have Aspen as the first Jupiter Jet cosplay. Awesome that we could share that together as friends, and really awesome for my daughter as well. Like even later that night, Thursday night, she was like, "So I'll always be the first Jupiter Jet," and yeah, she always will. So that was really cool, a really cool moment, and great to see Ashley and Jason. And I highly, highly, highly encourage you guys to pick up the trade this week. It's a really fun story with a great twist at the end. Another creator that I saw there who may not be as well known is Jason Metcalf, who's also a good friend, and he's going to be on the show really, really soon to talk about his art. And his show was down a little bit too. I think it's the third year in a row he's done Phoenix Comic Con. He usually does really well, and it was a positive experience for him, but again, just not quite as busy as it usually is. So let's see. I'm trying to think what else I can share with you guys. As far as panels go, the Valiant crew was there, new Valiant crew. We know all the turnover that's happened there. They still had a booth. They didn't seem to be as busy as they've been in previous years. So not sure how sales are going over there, but they had several panels. They were relatively well attended, and they're still sane and doing all the right things. And I'm still hoping the best for those guys. You know, I was friends with a lot of the previous Valiant crew, and there's kind of been a handing off of the baton, so to speak. And that being said, it's going to take a little while to transition everything, but it was good to see some of the Valiant crew. The video game area was brought down onto the main floor this year, which I found interesting. Another thing that the convention organizers said in that announcement on Sunday was that they sold fewer booths this year. I think 10% less booths, because they knew with ticket prices going up and the problems of last year that they might not sell as many tickets, or they wouldn't I should rephrase that. They wouldn't have an increase. Like every year for like the past 8 years, they've sold more badges than the year before. And they knew that that probably wouldn't be the case this year. They wouldn't have that same percentage increase, but they were hoping to at least keep it the same as it was last year. And by selling fewer spaces to retailers, there'd be less competition, and they were hoping the retailers could at least do what they've done in previous years. But again, that 30% drop in ticket sales did hurt, and there was a little bit less money made by the retailers, like I talked about earlier. So, but what it did allow some of the like all the video game stuff to get moved around, right? Like it all was on the bottom floor, which left the top floor just very few retailers up there, and mostly like all the cosplay, all the Legos, like fun interactive things for kids, and all the celebrities were up there in the Hall of Heroes as well. So there was also this really cool booth called Wild Bill's Old Fashioned Soda Company, and they had, I didn't try it, it was kind of pricey. It was $25 and you got this metal mug, right? And you could, it was all the soda you could possibly drink. But there were times when the line was huge. They had like five different flavors, I think. You'd go up there and you'd take your metal mug and you'd fill it up with whatever flavor you wanted. And at times, there's so many people, these mugs, everybody going to refill. The lines got a little long. And I heard like great things. I heard a lot of people walking around talking about how amazing the soda was. I really wanted to try it, but I just wanted to try it, right? I didn't want to spend like $25. That's a lot of soda to drink. So, and I'm not a big, huge soda drinker. But like there was a blueberry cream and a black cherry. And the one I really wanted to try was an orange cream. And supposedly it tasted like a 50-50 bar. And so, yeah, I really would have liked to have tried that out. But it was really cool. And I guess next year they're going to have two. They're going to have two. It was like a wagon. It wasn't even like a booth. It was like a wagon on wheels, I guess, going with the Wild Bill theme. And I think next year, yeah, they said they're going to have two. So I guess they did really, really well. They also had a giant like PlayStation truck with all kinds of video games in it. Tons of VR stuff, which was really cool. DC even had a pop-up booth there with DC merchandise this year. Let's see, who else was there? Aspen Comics was there. I mentioned Stranger Comics as well. Didn't see Boom or IDW there this year, or Image actually, and they usually have a booth there as well. But again, Comic Palooza in Houston was this weekend, as was MegaCon, so that kind of cuts into where you could be. Oh, Top Cow was there as well. I spoke to Henry at the Top Cow booth for a little bit. I know I'm kind of jumping around, just trying to remember other things. A couple of cool things that happened at panels. So the DC Modern Batman was attended by James Tynan, Greg Capullo, and Scott Snyder. And that was well attended. That was a lot of fun. There wasn't a moderator, and they basically just took questions from the crowd. And then the following day, they had a metal panel. And I don't know, for whatever reason, that metal panel was in a room that was half the size of the Modern Batman panel. The Modern Batman panel was almost full. Right, so now you've got just as many fans because it's Friday. No, it's Saturday, the busiest day traditionally, and you're doing it in a room half the size. It was standing room only, right? There was people lined up all along the walls and the back, and the fire marshal came in and partway through, like maybe 10 minutes in, and like, sorry, we've got to kick you out. You guys can't be standing in here. It's a fire hazard, right? So Snyder and Capullo are up on the stage themselves, along with three empty chairs. And they felt so bad. They're like, and there was a scattered chair here or there. Like, oh, there's one chair here, there's one chair here, there's one chair here. Those got all filled in by people that didn't want to leave. Fair enough. And Snyder and Capullo are like, we can stand at the podium. There's five seats up here at the front of the stage. Like, come on up. And so there was five people that got to go and sit up on stage And Snyder and Capullo stood at the post. I thought that was like such a class act. I mean, I know Greg, I know Scott, I know they're awesome people and they really, really appreciate their fans, but, like they didn't even hesitate. Not for a second. I don't know that everybody would have done that, right? But again, it just goes to show how much they appreciate the fans. And that panel, that DC Metal panel was so awesome. That whole panel was like a thank you to the fans. They talked about, Greg and Scott talked about what a risk metal was and how they had to fight for everything tooth and nail. And the fact that the fans showed up and made it such a huge event, they were just, you could tell how grateful they were. And again, it shows how much they appreciate their fans. And those guys, both of them are so interactive and responsive on Twitter to fans. Like, that's incredible to me. Like, as a comic fan growing up, knowing that, I could like send a message to one of my favorite creators and there's a pretty good chance they're going to answer me. That would have been incredible. That would have been amazing. And a lot of fans have that opportunity these days with Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo on Twitter and Instagram and all that kind of stuff. And even at conventions, those guys are all about the fans. So, that panel was so much fun. Also the Stranger Comics panel, I mentioned the Valiant panels were great. One last thing that I want to mention, I'm going to close with this. So let me decide if there's anything else I do want to mention. Oh, one other thing that may have contributed to some slow sales too, it goes into just how much of an experience the promoters are trying to turn Phoenix Comic Con in, right? I guess it was Saturday. Like I got there, I had three early interviews, I finished them up, and then I went upstairs to like where the like outside the convention center, the streets are closed. They haven't blocked off. There's like a beer garden with these Mr. fans like blowing air, even though they're under tents. They're moving the air around and keeping it cool with the mist, because again, it's been really hot the past few years. And there's a beer garden and food trucks and everything. But that's right up there, like right where you first come in. So if you're somebody who's never been to a convention before, and I saw so many people, like they walked in through the metal detectors, and the first thing they did was they went over to the beer garden, or they went over to the food trucks, or they went to any of a number of like CW booths that were out there that had like wheels you could spin to win prizes, or like cornhole to win prizes and things like that. So like it's an experience, it's a fan experience, right? And there's a lot to do before you even get inside the convention center. There's tons of stuff to do. So again, I may take hours for somebody who wants to try to experience everything to actually get down to the convention floor where there's things to buy, right? So unless that's specifically what you're down there to do and look at, it can be overwhelming, especially for somebody who's only there for one day. So that's another thing I'll mention. And I guess I should mention that on Saturday night, there was a fire alarm pulled by some jackass, and it's really too bad. I know a lot of people were upset because they had to evacuate the building. Now, it was 7:45, so the show floor was closed. So at least the retailers didn't lose out on any potential sales. And Phoenix Comic Fest did offer anyone who had a Saturday badge a free badge to return on Sunday. So there was that as well as kind of a thank you or a make do, if you will, a mea culpa. But it's just too bad, right? Because there are a lot of people who are upset because they're like, oh man, I had two panels I wanted to go to tonight. The Masquerade Ball got postponed. There was a VIP meet and greet with Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo that cost $150 that got didn't get to finish. There was a fundraiser 80s party to raise money for a children's charity that they had to refund the money for because the party never even got started. It was supposed to start at 8. So, I saw people on Twitter saying, man, can we just have one year where Phoenix Comic Con or Phoenix Comic Fest or whatever isn't effed up in some way? And it's too bad. It's not the promoter's fault. I mean, the promoter's not the one out there pulling the fire alarm. And I really wish I could get my hands on the jerk that did that, though. Just to, like, how selfish are you, right? That you want to ruin it for literally thousands of people. You want to ruin it for, you want to ruin 1,000 people's night, multiple thousands of people's night. I mean, you're just the lowest of the low. Like, seriously. Some of these people, they worked on that panel, their panel presentation, for a year, if not longer, some of them. It's the first panel ever. Maybe they worked on it more than a year. Or they've worked on it, you know, they did a panel last year, and now they're looking to improve on it, and they worked on it all year, and you ruined it for them. Like, not cool, man. Like, really not cool. But I saw so many people on social media calling out, you know, Phoenix Comic Con, like, hey, we're waiting. Like, because a lot of people waited to try to get back in. In the past, they've had fire alarms go off there, and it's been like an hour or 45 minutes, and they let people back in. I don't know why that wasn't the case this year. But some people waited upwards of 3 hours hoping that they would let people back in and continue the show, but they never did. And I saw a lot of people blaming the convention, but realize that this is not the convention's call. This is Phoenix Fire Department and their fire technicians going through and making that determination. And I don't know why they couldn't just determine that, hey, yeah, somebody pulled a fire alarm and that's what happened. Again, I'm not privy to that information. I don't know why they never let anybody back in, but it's too bad. And if, I mean, it's the last thing Phoenix Comic Con and Square Egg Productions needed was for that to happen after the nightmare of last year. You know, they're the only ones who have ever had, you know, an armed gunman, you know, get into the convention, you know, threatening to harm somebody and, you know, it's unprecedented. And so this is a little bit of salt in the wounds, you know, with already the 30% decrease in sales. So it was unfortunate. I didn't hear from anyone personally who was upset by it. I feel like all the vendors and guests that I talked to were very understanding about it, as were a few of the attendees that I talked to that I heard talking about it. They seem to be, you know, kind of taken in stride as well. But there were those and are those that are always going to complain. Anything goes wrong, they're always going to blame the convention rather than laying the blame at, you know, the police department or the government. I mean, just like last year when props got banned, it wasn't like it was the convention goers or the convention promoters, rather, the con organizers who said, yeah, we're going to ban all props. It was Phoenix Police Department going to the convention and saying, you've got two choices, cancel the show or ban all props. You know, you're in between a rock and a hard place at that point. So again, I mean, it wasn't the convention goer or the convention organizer's call to say, hey, we're going to basically end the show at 8 o'clock on Saturday night. I mean, that's the last thing that they want to do. But that's the reality of the situation, right? So there's not much they can do, and unfortunately they're going to get blamed for it. But I hope that anyone who's blaming them after listening to this realizes that that was a Phoenix Fire Department call, not the call of the convention organizers. And yeah, I think I did mention about the changing the name to Fan Fusion, and I said I was going to talk about that a little, and I'll just mention this, like a lot of the, especially the comic retailers, like they're already thinking maybe they're not going to show back up the following year because again, it costs so much to get in, their sales are down. And now you've gone from Comic Con to Comic Fest. Now Fan Fusion doesn't even have comic in the name anymore. And if you're a comic retailer, like why would you want to do a show like that? Honestly, and somebody's got to pay $160 to get in or $120, whatever. I'd rather do a smaller show where somebody pays $20 or $40 to get in and has that extra $180 to $100 to spend on comics, right? I mean, they're not there for the experience of the show. They are there to sell comics and make money. So, and the more these things turn into pop culture phenomenons with celebrities and this and that, the less it becomes about showing up to spend money on comics. So I don't know. They got booed when the announcement was made that it was going to be called Fan Fusion. So, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I think next year is going to be very telling for the show to see, what direction it heads in. So, all right. And the last thing I'm going to close with is a bit of a funny story. It was really great actually. So, the for most of the day on Sunday, last two-thirds of the day, I didn't do any interviews. I didn't do much, but just kind of walk around and enjoy the convention kind of as a fan. And my wife joined me, and she's not the biggest nerd or geek, I guess you'd say. She does, you know, I did convert her to a few things. Like she watched Battlestar Galactica and Stargate SG-1 and a few shows here and there. But it's not like, you know, she's not a huge Star Trek fan, hasn't seen all the Star Wars movies, seen bits and pieces of them here or there. So we're headed up to the third floor from the bottom floor, and that's where Hall of Heroes is, all the celebrities are and everything. And we get on the escalator, and this group of four guys gets on like literally right before us. And one of those four guys is Greg Grunberg. So he played Matt Parkman on Heroes. A lot of you will know him from that. He's been in Star Wars and just a lot of stuff. He has, you know, very familiar face, done tons of TV shows, things like that. So I kind of nudge my wife and I say, "Hey, that's Greg Grunberg, you know, Star Wars, Heroes." And she looks at him and she goes, "Oh yeah, he looks really familiar, but it's not." And I know she didn't know him from Star Wars, but I thought she'd remember from Heroes. She watched Heroes, but she's like, "Ah, it's not Heroes though that I remember him from." And I said, my wife's a huge Monk fan, right? So I say, "Monk." She's like, "That's it. That's where I know him from. I know him from Monk." So here he is, Greg Grunberg, right? He's there. He's meeting fans, signing autographs, taking photos, most likely for his Heroes work. He was on Alias as well. I should mention that. And Star Wars, right? So we get up to the top of the elevator and he's kind of walking. I'm like, "Hey, Greg, you mind if I tell you a really funny story that just happened?" And he was kind of in front of the pack of the guys. He goes, "Yeah, sure." He comes back and walks next to me. And I tell him the story. I'm like, "So, you know, we saw you on the escalator." And I told my wife, "Yeah, it's Greg Grunberg from Star Wars and Heroes." But she didn't know you from that. And he's like, "No." And I said, "No, she knows you from Monk. You were the guy." And he got a kick out of that. He started laughing. He's like, "Yeah, I was the guy." And he told us that he had so much fun on that episode getting to work with those two guys. And by that, he meant not only Tony Shalhoub, who won many or was at least nominated. I think he won several Emmys for his portrayal of Monk. But also Stanley Tucci was on that episode as well, who's an incredible actor as well. So he's like, "Yeah, getting to work with those two guys." And he's like, "Yeah, and I accidentally killed two people. Like, my character accidentally killed two people." And I was like, "Don't worry about it, Greg. You know, these things happen." So that was really funny. It was great. He's a really fun guy. If you're ever at a show that he's signing at, I encourage you to go and put a little money in his pocket and chat with him, because that interaction was a highlight of the show for me. He was so funny and genuine and really enjoyed the fact that that my wife knew him as the guy from his Monk episode. So. Again, I think overall it was a really, really positive show. A lot of fun, generated a lot of content, and it'll be coming out over probably the next few weeks, because there are a few things that I have to hold back, like the Dan Panosian interview and the Stefan Frank interview, just based on timing to help them promote the things they have coming up. Obviously, I don't know if you can tell, but my voice is pretty much shot at this point. Did a lot of interviewing, a lot of talking with friends and creators. So again, thank you all for listening. Make sure you go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. While you're there, please check out all the other coverage for pop culture, movies, and TV shows. Don't forget, twitter.com/thecomicsource is where we can be found on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.